The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Georgene Rice Show podcast. This program was originally broadcast live on 93.9 KPDQ. We hope you enjoy the show.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Georgene Rice Show, and happy Veterans Day. James Blend is producing, Clark Hilton Engineering. Dan Rice has given up the use of his office for the sake of the cause. Well, today is Veterans Day, and in the second hour of today's program, we're going to feature just that. Freedom Isn't Free is a Jerry Stewart special we'll share with you at 5 o'clock. For this Veterans Day, I hope you'll enjoy it. Well, this Veterans Day, we have great reason to thank our many veterans and reflect on the immeasurable value of their service. Celebrated every year, as we all know, on November the 11th, what we now know as Veterans Day was originally called Armistice Day, for the day of the Treaty of Versailles was signed to end World War I. Well, after World War II and the Korean War in 1954, Congress officially changed the name of Armistice Day to Veterans Day. It was thought at the end of World War I that would be the war to end all wars. Sadly, that was not the case. Well, the holiday is distinct from Memorial Day because it emphasizes remembering the fallen. The purpose of Veterans Day is to serve as an opportunity to reflect on and honor the past and ongoing contributions of American veterans. Every year, new veterans rejoin civilian society, having faithfully discharged their duty. But for civilians who are unfamiliar with the culture and the inner workings of the armed services, the contributions of veterans in building the world in which we now live is easy to pretty much overlook. Well, threats to American interests from terrorist organizations, from countries like Iran, Russia, China, North Korea, they persist in their subtle and overt aggression around the globe. And the American armed forces relentlessly defend those interests wherever they're in need. Well, Americans can rest easy at night because the U.S. armed forces do their job well. They're on 24/7. And the seamlessness with which many veterans reintegrate into civilian society, contributing through leadership and resilience and innovation to the public and private sectors, makes the gravity of their sacrifice pretty easy to overlook. But Veterans Day is an opportunity for us, for Americans, to intentionally reflect on what may be overlooked and to consider how best to honor their sacrifices, perhaps in new ways, ways that will encourage them. Well, the first thing an individual can do is to recognize that the holiday is specifically designed to encourage gratitude and reflection, not necessarily memorial and celebration. It's an opportunity to learn and reflect on the principles of service, commitment, honor, selflessness, and patriotism that veterans model. One example, reflect on the depth of their commitment. The entirety of a veteran's sacrifice goes beyond the years of their life they dedicated to the service to include their individual skills, their physical and mental well-being, and the work they contribute to civilian society after their service. Consider the expense and the discipline of their service. Veterans are generally successful at reintegrating into civilian society, bringing unique perspectives, skills, and experience to the workplace. And they model a loyalty to the greater good to the community in which they live. Veterans also serve in their communities, often at rates of volunteerism that are higher than those of the civilian population. And we can appreciate the honor and patriotism they demonstrate by executing their duty to the country as it is, without losing faith in America's potential to improve and to grow to be better. It's an honor to have veterans living in our midst today who we can personally honor and thank. So let's do that. Let's thank them. But civilians can also listen to veterans' experiences, show up at parades, donate to VA advocacy groups, write letters, visit VA hospitals, and especially support the reintegration of veterans for whom the transition is not so easy. Also, remember the bigger picture. We can honor their sacrifice through our own commitments to participate in growth, security, and future of this country. In each of our individual callings, we can work alongside them to defend the freedom and prosperity of our nation and fellow citizens. Well, the unique qualities that makes America exceptional in the world begin here with those dedicated to serving, defending, and bettering our nation. Thank you, veterans, and happy Veterans Day to everyone. Well, millions of American patriots have for generations honored their oaths to support and defend the liberty that was endowed by our Creator as affirmed in our Declaration of Independence and enshrined in the Constitution. Today, we formally honor them, though we appreciate them every day. We remain a free people because they have stood bravely in harm's way and because millions remain on post at this very moment and in the days ahead. For this, we, the American people, offer our heartfelt thanks. General Douglas MacArthur said this, "Duty, honor, country. Those three hallowed words reverently dictate what you ought to be, what you can be, what you will be." He's speaking to his troops. "They are your rallying point to build courage when courage seems to fail, to regain faith when there seems to be little cause for faith, to create hope when hope becomes forlorn." John Stuart Mill said this, "War is an ugly thing, but not the ugliest of things. The decayed and degraded state of moral and patriotic feelings, which thinks that nothing is worth war, is much worse. A man who has nothing for which he is willing to fight, nothing which is more important than his own personal safety, is a miserable creature and has no chance of being free unless made and kept so by the exertions of better men than himself." And with the political rancor that dominates the public discourse these days and the news cycles, we should remind others of the following observation from an Army veteran, Charles N. Province. He wrote this, "It is the soldier, not the minister, who has given us freedom of religion. It is the soldier, not the reporter, who has given us freedom of the press. It is the soldier, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the soldier, not the campus organizer, who has given us freedom to protest. It is the soldier, not the lawyer, who has given us the right to a fair trial. It is the soldier, not the politician, who has given us the right to vote. And it's the soldier who salutes the flag, who serves beneath the flag, and whose coffin is draped by the flag, who allows the protester to burn the flag." Very sobering statement. Well, today we acknowledge and recognize our veterans. And again, in the second hour of today's program, we have a Veterans Day special, "Freedom Isn't Free" by Jerry Stewart. Well, you probably know by now that Governor Kate Brown announced the addition of four counties, Baker, Clackamas, Union, and Washington, to the two-week pause, as it's being referred to, on social activities to help stop the rapid spread of COVID-19, where community transmission is on the rise. Well, these four counties, Jackson, Malheur, Marion, Multnomah, and Umatilla counties, are on pause. That was announced on Friday. The pause measures will be in effect for 2 weeks from today through November the 25th. Now, as we continue, the governor said, "As we continue to see alarmingly high cases reflective of sporadic community spread, now is the time to implement measures to further reduce gatherings and curb human contact." She went on to say the two-week pause measures are designed to reduce the amount of people we interact with and the frequency of those encounters. "We all must continue to do our part to stop this virus from spreading, particularly limiting our social gatherings and interactions, or we risk further closures and restrictions." Well, the two-week pause measure includes urging all businesses to mandate work from home to the greatest extent possible, pausing long-term care facility visits to take place indoors to protect staff and residents, reducing maximum restaurant capacity to 50 people, including customers and staff, for indoor dining with a maximum party size of 6, continuing to encourage outdoor dining and takeout, reducing the maximum capacity of other indoor activities to 50 people. That includes gyms, fitness organizations and studios, bowling alleys, ice rinks, indoor sports, pools and museums, and limiting social gatherings to our household or no more than 6 people if the gathering includes those from outside your household, reducing the frequency of those social gatherings significantly in a 2-week period and keeping the same 6 people in your social gathering circle. Well, the two-week pause is being instituted in counties with a caseload of case rate above 200 per 100,000 people over the last 2-week period, or more than 60 cases over a 2-week period for counties with less than 30,000 people. So it has been imposed and will be in place for the counties I've mentioned for at least the next 2 weeks, beginning today and ending on the 25th of this month. By the way, lockdown was named the word of the year by Collins Dictionary. Collins records a 6,000% increase in the usage of the word since 2019, with TikToker and Megxit ranking almost among mostly coronavirus-related terms. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. We need to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. When Michael Hambly got the call from his 87-year-old mother in July, he was sure there was a mistake. She told him that her assisted living facility, the one she paid for with her pension, was charging a one-time $900 fee for masks, cleaning supplies, and meal delivery. Jennifer Kokenhoven had a similar experience back in June, a $60 personal protective equipment charge tacked onto her mother's ambulance bill that went uncovered by insurance. She was already wearing a mask, Ms. Kokenhoven says. She noted that the one-mile ambulance ride already cost $1,759 before the fee. Well, in New York City, Zara Lee Garcia was surprised to see a $45 fee tacked onto a dental cleaning in July. It was billed to her directly, not for not her health plan, a practice that state regulators outlawed the next month as a violation of consumer protection laws. Well, the coronavirus pandemic has made the practice of health care more costly, and providers have to wear protective gear and sanitized equipment more often, even as they face declining revenue. Two groups of providers have been particularly hit hard. Dentists have lost billions since patients began postponing their non-urgent dental care this spring, and assisted living facilities are grappling with lower overall demand. They've also been forced to admit fewer residents to help stop the spread of infection. Well, to address this financial shortfall, some health providers are turning directly to their patients. Surprise, COVID and PPE fees are turning up across the country in bills examined by the New York Times. It's a complicated answer. Who pays for this? A physician who is in charge of the American Medical Association's Practice Expense Committee. You look around the community and see additional costs being imposed right and left because of COVID-19, but it's not being underwritten by insurance, and it's got to be covered. Pedicures, restaurants have all had additional charges. It would be an undue burden to ask the medical community to bear this alone. So it seems from their perspective, and perhaps a reasonable perspective, that the buck stops with the patients. Well, some of these fees, when millions of Americans are reeling after losing their jobs and the health insurance that came with it, have drawn the attention of state attorneys generals who say that charging patients directly can take advantage of vulnerable consumers or violate health insurance contracts and consumer protection laws. The new charges range from a couple of dollars to nearly $1,000. The cynical view is that some see this as an opportunity. Everyone understands something unusual is going on, and most consumers are ready to embrace the idea that they'll need to bear some expense. Unfortunately, in every setting, there are a percentage of folks who will take advantage of that situation. So you might want to take a close look at your medical bills. My guess is, in most cases, it reflects the actual cost of doing business under COVID-19, but they're calling it the COVID fee, and you may see it popping up on your bills. Well, newly reelected Mayor Ted Wheeler, having already served a term, said getting tents off public sidewalks will be a priority during his second term in office. Well, the Portland mayor said one of his priorities for the new year will be getting homeless campers off public sidewalks and into managed campsites. The tents seem to be everywhere in Portland, from the city's core to neighborhoods and beyond the city's boundaries. It's a problem that vexed mayors before him and eluded solutions during the first 4 years in office. Now, the newly reelected mayor says he's ready to take another shot at the problem. We all know we can't continue to have a situation where we have hundreds and hundreds of tents blocking sidewalks, blocking businesses, blocking access to people's homes, and so on. So the mayor has a plan. Move the tents and the campers into a large managed camp or series of camps. Now, there has to be a willingness on the part of those who are living in those camps, in those tents, but this is what the mayor says. We're also going to have to look at bigger strategies like extending our managed camp system, potentially creating areas that are safe camp areas where people know that if they pitch a tent, and there are some areas, perhaps out by the airport, there are some areas closer to the central city. If we identify those places and say, look, in a pinch, you can camp here, he said. Well, the city has already set up three large campsites on the east and west sides of the Willamette River to help those without a home stay safe during the pandemic. Dignity Village near the airport is a longtime encampment for those who are homeless. And advocates say that they only like part of that plan. Says one, I would urge the mayor to just stop after he talks about the compassionate approaches, because the second part of it just is going to make the problem worse. She urges that forcing people to move their tents will make more people sick and move them further away from help. Whenever we're dealing with homelessness, of course, we're dealing with people, and it's people in poverty, and that's what's going on, people in extreme poverty. And it's incumbent on everyone in society for us to own the fact that poverty is part of our society. Well, it's a very complex problem. There are certainly people who are legitimately in poverty. There are some who have chosen to live on the streets, eschewing any level of responsibility. There are those who are mentally ill. There are the newly poor. There's a whole range there, and coming up with a solution to manage the problem, which has an impact on everyone in the community, is going to be a challenge that the mayor says he's now prepared to deal with. Well, taking a look at national news, the Biden transition is hanging in limbo. They're waiting the General Services Administration to certify the election, which will give President-elect Joe Biden and his team the power to make decisions about the future of the federal government. But the incoming administration is moving forward anyway, urging the GSA to move quickly and respect the will of the American people. Well, the truth is, we don't clearly know what the will of the American people is until, as he said back in September, every ballot is cast and counted. And we'll talk later about the challenges that are currently being raised. Well, a Biden-Harris transition spokesperson said that the transition is moving forward with preparations so that President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris are ready to lead the country on day one and meet the pressing challenges facing the nation, end quote. Well, the GSA has not yet made an ascertainment decision, the formal declaration set up in 1963 by the Presidential Transition Act. Until that ascertainment is made, the Biden team cannot formally begin the transition process. The GSA has defended its precedent, which they said was established by the Clinton administration in 2000. And if you look at the Gore-Bush controversy, this has happened before. Well, the GSA spokesperson said that an ascertainment has not yet been made, and that the GSA and its administrator will continue to abide by and fulfill all requirements under the law. Meanwhile, the Biden transition team is not ruling out legal action if the Trump administration doesn't cooperate. It's kind of like the Obama administration when Trump was elected. And Biden is calling for unity, but some fellow Democrats are contradicting the message with spite toward Trump supporters. Not just Trump, but Trump supporters. Well, the Biden team can't get intelligence reports until Trump concedes. And Trump will concede and work on the peaceful transition if the legal fights fall short, according to sources and despite his tweets. Well, a Nevada poll worker tells Laura Ingram that she saw blatant voter fraud. Well, voter fraud was allegedly committed in Nevada during the early voting period, according to a Clark County poll worker speaking on the Ingram angle, what she said she witnessed in an exclusive interview on Tuesday night. Well, the whistleblower, whose identity was hidden, told the host that she noticed white envelopes being passed around and ripped open near a Biden-Harris van while on a walk during her lunch break. The envelope handlers then leaned against the side of the van in order to mark the papers, which she recognized as ballots. As I got closer, I thought, those are ballots. I walked by four or five times. On the next time I walked by, they were putting them in the envelopes. They were putting them in a white and pink envelope, end quote. Well, the same worker has released a sworn affidavit to the Trump campaign disclosing what she claimed to have witnessed. The affidavit, which has been submitted to the Justice Department, also claims voters were allowed to cast ballots without valid identification. In other developments, a Pennsylvania postal worker's claims of voter fraud have come under question. And Trey Gowdy says those alleging voter fraud have a responsibility to prove it. Very difficult to do. Tucker Carlson says rampant polling errors amounted to voter suppression. Meanwhile, the Biden coronavirus advisor wants the U.S. to distribute vaccine globally before it's available in the U.S. Oncologist Dr. Zeke Emanuel, one of the 10 advisory board members named to the Democratic presidential-elect Joe Biden's coronavirus task force, has pushed the U.S. and other countries to not hoard the vaccine. Emanuel, who served as a key architect of the Affordable Care Act under the Obama administration, co-authored a paper in September in which he encouraged officials to follow the fair priority model, which calls for a fair international distribution of vaccine rather than what he and his co-authors characterized as vaccine nationalism. The Trump administration had said that the U.S. will share any coronavirus vaccine it develops with other countries after America needs Americans' needs are met, and that the U.S. will not coordinate with the World Health Organization on distribution for reasons that have little to do with the vaccine, but everything to do with the poor leadership of the WHO. Meanwhile, melatonin is being eyed as a possible coronavirus treatment, according to a new study. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. We need to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. Well, GOP bashing and softball questions took center stage at Biden's first presser as president-elect. Sort of. Florida's DeSantis moves to allow citizens to shoot looters and rioters targeting their businesses. And Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is offering $1 million reward for evidence of voter fraud. Portland City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, who wants to defund the police, didn't hesitate calling 911 on a Lyft driver she was disgruntled with. Boeing loses some more 737 MAX orders, but it's eyeing the jets' U.S. return. Still, Europe tariffs are looming. China leads the global auto industry recovery from the virus, with October sales rising 12.5%. And California voters rejected the revamp of their property tax system. China's ByteDance challenges the Trump TikTok divestiture order, and Alibaba shares plunged after more Chinese regulatory threats. Walmart is teaming up with GM's Cruise to test grocery delivery with self-driving cars. Well, Byron York points out that Trump has a point in Pennsylvania in its effort to challenge vote counts in key states. The Trump campaign has filed lots of lawsuits that have little chance of winning, but there is one suit that it should win, not only for the Trump campaign or the 2020 election, but for all elections in the future. It's the court fight over Pennsylvania's election rules, and it involves a fundamental issue that is important to all 50 states. A look at how Pennsylvania sidestepped the law and barely avoided the disaster can be found in the Wall Street Journal. And in Allegheny County, the Board of Elections voted to count ballots that came without dates, regardless of the law. Well, in a long thread, Andy McCarthy, he explained why he's sympathetic to POTUS's right to challenge results and need to demonstrate the over 71 million Trump voters that the election was valid. What I object to is the presumption that massive fraud occurred. And that's where some in the GOP are pressing against the president's rhetoric. Meanwhile, Mr. Tillis has won the Senate seat in North Carolina. Mr. Cunningham has conceded, and Republican Michelle Steele, an immigrant, defeated a Democrat in California's 48th district, another House flip. Well, Black Lives Matter to Biden-Harris says this: it's time to pay up, with a letter telling the pair, we want something for our vote. A video game has removed the voice of an actor for their belief that they aren't all in on transgender ideology, which apparently wasn't true, but woke doesn't bother with the facts. And the United Nations Human Rights Council is reviewing the U.S. record on racism. On the council, North Korea, Cuba, Iran, Syria, and China. The story looks at extinct animals scientists want to bring back. This is a news story from the What Could Possibly Go Wrong files. Jurassic Park, right here. Justice Brett Kavanaugh and John It's a Tax Roberts signaled that they will uphold Obamacare, as arguments were heard on the case just days ago. It does seem fairly clear that the proper remedy would be to sever the mandate provision and leave the rest of the law in place, Kavanaugh said on Tuesday. Congress left the rest of the law intact when it lowered the penalty to zero, Roberts said. I think it's hard for you to argue Congress intended the entire act to fall if the mandate was struck down, if the same Congress that lowered the tax penalty to zero did not even try to repeal the rest of the act, end quote. We'll wait for the final decision. Well, leftists invited voters to exploit the Peach State's weak residency rules to stuff ballot boxes. And by the way, Georgia has decided they will recount all of their ballots by hand. Well, the Trump campaign has 240 pages of sworn affidavits proving fraud, and a federal lawsuit has been filed in Michigan. Pennsylvania received 10,000 mail-in ballots after polls closed on Election Day, thanks to court-sanctioned grace periods. And 353 U.S. counties, $1.8 million, or rather million more voters registered than were eligible citizens in 353 U.S. counties. Well, Trump's legal assault exposes election shenanigans, but faces some pretty high hurdles. As we discussed earlier this week, the courts are loath to overturn the outcome of an election. And for the record, Biden in September said, "I will not declare victory until the election is independently certified." It has yet to be independently certified. Double standards? Well, Ben Rhodes admits that Biden is talking with foreign leaders about his plans. Rhodes' comments immediately generated allegations that Biden is potentially violating the Logan Act, the 18th century law that criminalizes unauthorized communication with foreign governments by American citizens. Americans are, of course, familiar with the Logan Act because Michael Flynn, Trump's first national security advisor, was accused of violating the law during the Trump transition period when he engaged in discussions with then-Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. Well, Black Lives Matter has penned a letter to Biden and Harris saying, "We want something for our vote." And Mitch McConnell was unanimously reelected the leader of the GOP. Andrew McCain feigns shock and disappointment by problems found in the Carter Page FISA warrant that he approved. Yet he also claims he did nothing wrong and was wrongly fired. Not sure how you reconcile all of them, but I'm quoting. Etta has prompted hurricane watch and tropical storm warnings in Florida's Gulf Coast. The subtropical storm Theta was forming near Africa and makes 220 the busiest but not the strongest hurricane season on record. And the Vatican's Theodore McCarrick report says Pope John Paul II knew of misconduct allegations nearly two decades before the cardinal's removal. And authors have retracted a study showing efficacy of mask mandates as Biden pushed for nationwide requirements. On the flip side, the CDC report says masks protect wearers and everyone else. This is, again, contributes to the confusion of many Americans trying to determine what's the right thing to do. Well, the U.S. Was scolded by tone-deaf China, Russia, and North Korea, and Iran on human rights in the U.N., and a Japanese town has deployed a monster wolf robot, or a series of them, to deter wild bears. Well, I guess that's one good use. Hey, on this day in history, 1620, pilgrims aboard the Mayflower anchored off Massachusetts. They sign a compact calling for a body politic. 1909, President William Howard Taft accepts the recommendation of a joint Army-Navy board that Pearl Harbor in the Hawaiian Islands be made the principal U.S. naval station in the Pacific. 1918, fighting in World War I ends as the Allies and Germany sign an armistice in the forests of, well, I don't speak French, Compiègne, something like that. 1921, the remains of an unidentified American service member are interred in the tomb of the unknown soldier at Arlington National Cemetery in a ceremony presided over by President Warren Harding. 1972, the U.S. Army turns over its base at Long Binh to South Vietnamese, symbolizing the end of direct U.S. military involvement in the Vietnam War, 1972 on this day. 1987, following the failure of two Supreme Court nominations, President Ronald Reagan announces his choice of Justice Anthony Kennedy, who would go on to win confirmation, his third choice. 1992, the Church of England votes to ordain women as priests. And finally, on this day in history, 1998, President Clinton orders warships, planes, and troops to the Persian Gulf as he lays out his case for a possible attack on Iraq. Iraq, meanwhile, shows no sign of backing down from its refusal to deal with UN weapons inspectors. Well, in the ongoing election, Alaska Republican Senator Dan Sullivan on Wednesday won re-election over Democratic challenger Al Gross, putting Republicans at 50 seats in the U.S. Senate compared to Democrats 48, according to a projection from the Associated Press. The results came 8 days after Election Day. Sullivan was ahead of Gross by about 20 points Wednesday, according to results. I want to congratulate my fellow Marine, Senator Dan Sullivan, on his victory. National Republican Senatorial Committee Chairman Senator Todd Young said in a Wednesday statement, "Alaskans know Dan as a man who always puts service before self and who has champion the unique need of his state in Washington. The state will be well served with another 6 years of his representation." Well, control of the Senate now comes down to two Georgia runoff elections in January. The state requires a candidate to receive at least 50% of the vote to win, and no candidates in two separate races received more than half the vote. Republicans are angling for at least one of those seats to keep the majority. But if Democrats sweep both races, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris would be the tiebreaker to vote in their favor. Sullivan is a husband and father of three daughters, was first elected to become Alaska's eighth senator in 2015. Gross is a husband and father of four and a doctor of commercial fishermen. His mother was the executive director of the United Fishermen of Alaska, and his father served as an attorney general in Alaska. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. Back in a minute.
You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. Just a reminder, in the second hour of today's program, we'll hear a Veterans Day special by Jerry Stewart, Freedom Isn't Free. That's coming up in the next hour of The Georgine Rice Show. Well, Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger on Wednesday announced that election officials will conduct a manual recount of all presidential ballots as President-elect Joe Biden leads in the state by just over 14,000 votes out of nearly 5 million. Well, Raffensperger previously said the state, which has 16 electoral votes, was headed toward a recount after Election Day due to a narrow gap between Biden and President Trump. The Trump campaign and Republican lawmakers like Georgia Representative Doug Collins have been pushing for a manual recount. This is a process. It is a process defined by law. These men and women in my office will continue to follow the law and count every legal ballot. Well, Raffensperger said during a Wednesday press conference, with the margin being so close, it will require a full by-hand recount in each county. This will help build confidence. It will be an audit, a recount, and a re-canvass all at once. It will be a heavy lift, but we will work with the counties to get this done in time for our state certification, which is November 20th. Well, Trump's camp continues to wage legal battles in some of the battleground states that are still counting votes, filing lawsuits challenging the court in Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Nevada. The Georgia suit, which hinged on a poll worker claiming he saw 53 late ballots illegally compiled by with a group of eligible ballots, was tossed out by a Kathmandu County judge on Thursday. Georgia is also facing two Senate runoff elections in January after two candidates fell shy of 50% of the votes there, which candidates must receive in order to win under state law. The results of the runoff elections will likely determine whether Democrats or Republicans control the Senate. So that's another question yet to be answered. Now, here are a list of some of the headlines that I'm reading about the challenge to this election being issued by the Trump administration. And I should mention tomorrow we're going to talk with if I can find it here, I'll mention it. Anyway, we're going to talk about what the process looks like, what's happening, and where we go from here. I think it's important to try to understand all of that, so we'll get into it. But here are some of the headlines to give you some perspective on what's happening. Attorney General William Barr has authorized federal prosecutors across the country to pursue substantial allegations of voting irregularities. 10 GOP attorneys general urged the Supreme Court to take up a case on Pennsylvania ballot deadline extensions. Clear fraud in vote counting in Michigan County, says attorney who filed the suit. Mitch McConnell says Trump is 100% within his rights to weigh legal options on election. Thousands of unregistered people allowed to vote by mail in Detroit, poll watcher alleges. Georgia election official, we are going to find that people did illegally vote. 10,000 dead people returned mail-in ballots in Michigan, analysis shows. Trump campaign calls for full hand count of ballots in Georgia, which they have successfully now achieved. Lindsey Graham, possible ballot harvesting reported in Pennsylvania, nursing homes involving 25,000 residents. McEnany, the White House spokesperson, announces 234 pages of affidavits alleging election irregularities in Michigan. Another headline, Trump wins Alaska over Biden projection. Pennsylvania received 10,000 mail ballots after polls closed on election. Pompeo, there will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. Wisconsin, another headline, Wisconsin elections panel guidance led clerks to fill out witness addresses contrary to state law. And the headlines continue. Trump campaign hopeful lawsuit in Pennsylvania will trigger recount. Tens of thousands of Pennsylvania ballots returned earlier than sent date. In other words, they were received by elections before they were sent out. I'm not quite clear how that makes sense, but there's an investigation or a suit or some kind of oversight. Unusual election irregularities justify lawsuits and ballot recounts, Chuck DeVore says. And administration officials say optimism growing that Trump wins Arizona. These are just some of the headlines that are emerging in the long wait to certification of this election. It is a long, hard slog for the Trump campaign to win this election, not just in terms of the numbers, but as I've mentioned before, the courts are very reluctant to overturn the outcome of an election. So we'll see what happens. It will very likely take another week or two or possibly more. We have, for example, two Georgia Senate races that are pending a runoff. So there's a lot yet to be decided, but there will be, I predict, an inauguration in January, and one of the two presidential candidates will swear in the oath of office. Well, justices, as I mentioned briefly earlier, have been hinting that Obamacare may survive another legal challenge. The Supreme Court, as you know, took that up recently. Most of the Affordable Care Act appeared likely to survive yet another legal challenge, as five justices indicated that they were not inclined to strike it down. This is based on arguments that were made and responses from the associate justices. Well, the court on Tuesday heard Texas versus California. It was a suit brought by multiple Republican attorneys general that argues that the individual mandate, a signature part of the health care law, is unconstitutional and that the entire law must be struck down as a result. Now, this is significant if there is a Biden president coming back to the White House. Well, at least five justices seemingly said that even if the mandate is found to be unconstitutional, it can likely be separated from the rest of the law. It does seem fairly clear that the proper remedy would be to sever the mandate provision and leave the rest of the law in place. Again, that's a quote from Justice Brett Kavanaugh during the arguments. Well, though the mandate originally imposed a fine on those who opted out of receiving insurance, the fine was lowered to zero in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, rendering it largely unenforceable. Well, this was echoed by Chief Justice John Roberts, who said that Congress left the rest of the law intact when it lowered the penalty to zero. Well, opponents of the suit allege that if the Supreme Court were to side with the plaintiffs, millions of Americans would lose their health coverage in the middle of a pandemic as a result. One study by the Urban Institute estimated that if the law is overturned, over 20 million Americans would risk losing their health care. Now, risk and actually losing, I'm not clear what is more accurate, but Texas versus California is the third time the Affordable Care Act has appeared before the Supreme Court. In 2012, the court upheld the individual mandate as a tax, with Roberts writing the majority opinion. And in 2015, the court ruled that the federal government could provide tax subsidies to facilitate lower-income Americans in buying health insurance. Well, greater speculation has surrounded Texas versus California because the Trump administration has supported the plaintiffs in their push to overturn the Affordable Care Act, and because three new justices have joined the court since it last heard the case related to the law. Well, in addition to Kavanaugh, who was confirmed in October of 2018, Justices Neil Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett joined the court in April of 2017 and October of 2020, respectively. So this will be an interesting case that may or may not tell us something about the configuration of the court and what we might expect in the days and months ahead. So kind of an interesting case to wait for the resolution of. Well, I want to let you know that every month, we at KPDQ give away a new book from various authors. Now, this month, we're giving away What Belief Can Do. It's written by Ron Archer. Readers will discover that sometimes our greatest blessings are contained in our greatest challenges. You can enter to win this new book, a signed copy, by the way, at What Belief Can Do online at kpdq.com. And I would encourage you to do just that, kpdq.com. They'll be doing the drawing at the end of the month. And again, every month we give away a new book from various authors. So stay in touch with the website, kpdq.com, and enter to win when you're there. Wouldn't it be nice to have your mortgage or your rent paid for a whole year? Now think about that for a moment. Well, it's possible this year if you enter the Christmas Mortgage Miracle with 93.9 KPDQ and Cascade Furniture. You can enter once per day now through December 20th. Enter to win the Christmas Mortgage Miracle at kpdq.com. Again, another great reason to check out that website. And one final giveaway, the Family Movie Night Kendrick Brothers giveaway. You can check that out when you're at the website as well, kpdq.com. Freedomisn'tFree.com. Up next, we're going to share a Veterans Day special, Freedom Isn't Free, produced by Jerry Stewart on this Veterans Day. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show.
Thanks for listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. If you'd like to download a podcast of the show or would like more information on today's guests, please visit the show at kpdq.com or on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at GRice Show and like us on Facebook. And join us live every weekday at 4 for more critical thinking for critical times on 93.9 KPDQ.